It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The season is changing, and that's a signal to many wild animals, including humans, that it's time to take action before winter comes. This hour, we'll talk about all of the activity going on out there. What's happening right now is what wildlife biologist Jim Pease likes to call the fall shuffle. And Jim Pease is here with us today. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Charity. How are you? I'm doing
very
the shuffle
good.
Right here in the studio. It's a new dance.
Right, right. I think Super Bowl shuffle jokes are maybe a little past their prime.
Oh, maybe so. I don't know.
With us also today is Adam Janke, Iowa State University Extension wildlife expert. Hello, Adam.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
And, Jim, let's talk about what's going on right now, because we do have that little bit of coolness in the air. You're starting to see some color on the trees, but it's not the weather, really, that gives the signal to all of these critters that it's time to do something, right?
Well, it's partially the weather, but it's more the day length. Certainly the changing day length. I got up this morning at, 6:30, and it was still dark. And it's like, wait a minute, it's not supposed to be this way. It's certainly the day length that is the primary signal. But there are other changes in the environment, too. For example, all of the elderberries that a couple of weeks ago that were covering all the elderberries on my shrubs in my yard are now pretty much gone. So the changes in food availability are beginning to signal as well. And then certainly the weather. You're getting bigger storms coming out of the north, and that is a signal to a lot of birds, ooh, we better take advantage of this. Those that are migrants, the 300 or so species that migrate through Iowa, are getting that signal, gee, I better follow one of these storms if I want to make it to South America, you know, by the time I need to. So lots of changes going on. So there are big seasonal food changes, there are changes in the day length, and there are changes in the weather patterns that are signaling them, and the temperatures perhaps signal some that they need to do something differently.
Now, of course, you mentioned 300 or so species that migrate through Iowa.
Right.
Some of those are a little more visible than others. Right now, I know that a lot of people are seeing big flocks of pelicans. What are some of the other birds that we're seeing right now because of this change that's taking place?
Well, the interesting thing for a lot of birders, if you're really into birding, a lot of people are noticing warblers are moving through. A lot of the northern species are already down into our area or have moved on through. Swallows, for example. We may have had, if you paddle the rivers at all, hundreds and hundreds of cliff swallows nesting under bridges and under cliffs, and bank swallows nesting in their big colonies in the banks. Well, they're pretty much gone now. There'll be some that are still hanging around or some that have come down from the north, spending a few days or weeks here, but most of them have already moved farther south. So warblers and vireos, those sorts of things are moving. Lots and lots of the songbirds that we see in the summer are already on the move. It's just amazing.
Well, and the pelicans are easy to see. So even if
right.
you're not into birding.
Right.
Or
yeah,
not...
you can see those. That's for sure. So.
Well, and what are some of the other? I mean, I've seen, of course, flocks of geese. Is that a sign? We know that they kind of circle around a little bit. They aren't necessarily getting a job done.
Well, Canada geese used to be a signal. When I was growing up in southeastern Iowa in the Mississippi, we would see them in the fall. And we would see them in the spring, and they would just pass through because they didn't nest here. But, of course, now Canadas are nesting here, giant Canadas are nesting here in the state, and many are actually staying year-round so that we have these sort of resident flocks of geese, especially in urban areas where there are ponds or pools that are kept open artificially with aerators and that. They're taking advantage of artificial food supplies that are made available for them in some cities. They take advantage of their grazers during the summer times. So they take advantage of things like golf courses and cemeteries and mowed yards and those sorts of places. So those are staying year-round, but there are lots of ducks that are beginning. We've already had, for example, the opening of the teal season in Iowa. That means that the blue-winged teal in particular, which are prairie nesting species, have already started moving south from their prairie nesting grounds farther north, and some in Iowa for sure, and then we'll move on south. So the teal season has already been here. So so there are lots of waterfowl that are moving. As you mentioned, the pelicans have already started to flock up. Now, the pelicans will hang around for a while. You'll see flocks of pelicans going through, hanging around for a week or 2 weeks, depending on the weather, and depending on the availability of fish and the sizes that they need to eat.
Is this just a refueling pit stop?
Right, exactly. And as they move farther south, going down as far as the Gulf of Mexico, basically, to spend the winter.
Well, and again, I realize that so many different birds migrate in different ways, but it does seem like such a tremendous expenditure of energy, especially for those birds that are going thousands of miles.
It is an amazing expenditure of energy.
So do a lot of different species make pit stops to kind of build themselves back up and recuperate?
Yeah, it depends on the species. For example, I mentioned swallows. Swallows need to, they can feed as they go. So they'll actually migrate through the daylight hours. Warblers, on the other hand, need to, instead of feeding insects on the wing, they glean insects. They pick insects off of leaves and branches and fruit and places like that. So they'll actually migrate at night, stop during the day to feed. So you'll see them around during the day, and that's what people are seeing now, lots and lots of species of warblers here. And they'll be migrating over the next we'll probably still see warblers through the end of the month into early October, or some a little later than that. Some species will stay a little longer than that, but most of them will be through before the end of the month.
If they fly at night and feed by day, when do they sleep?
Not very much. They don't sleep much at all. That's a great question, and one that I think is still being answered. Certainly there are periods of, we won't call them cat naps, but maybe we'll call them bird naps, during the day they'll take some time to sleep, but they're migrating at night, feeding in the day. So not a lot of sleep. That's exactly right.
Well, and we talked about how day length is one of those triggers for animals, and the weather a little bit, and food. So if the weather has been irregular, if we have, say, a very late spring,
right,
and so the food items are farther behind, does that push migration, or does that just mean they don't get as much to eat?
That's a great question, and it's one of the challenges, I think, that climate change has brought to migrating species. And one of the reasons that a lot of folks are concerned and not really sure what's going to happen as the climate changes, how does that delay the migratory pattern increase the rate of migration? Those are really tough questions to answer, and I'm not sure that anybody knows yet, but certainly we have noticed it in flowers and in some birds coming earlier, staying a little later. Not so much in the birds as we notice it in plant early blooming dates and that, but the phenology that we've talked about sometime in the past in the program, the timing at which things natural events occur, migration has not changed that much, but it's certainly changing a little bit. The earliest dates of arrival of some birds are being pushed farther and farther back, into some cases into March, even late February, and the latest date at which they're staying for some species also gets to be a little later.
Now, during migratory bird season, when you get to see them pass through Iowa in the fall, and I'll ask you this question first, Adam, and then Jim, is there a particular species that you always look forward to seeing, and how can we see that species?
Well, there's a lot of species that sort of signal different periods in the migration that I think is exciting. Jim alluded to it with the case of waterfowl. Blue-winged teal are the first to come, and their story is interesting. They're coming from Prairie Canada and on their way to southern and central America for their wintering grounds. We call them neotropical migrants. And so it's exciting to see those species and think about what they're up to, where they're heading, and where they've been. But the other one that I think is the opposite end of the migration, sort of the bookend of the migration or the grand finale, is the snow goose migration.
Yeah.
And that's pretty conspicuous. Depending on where you are in the state, particularly along the Missouri River, it can be quite substantial. We have these snow geese that have spent their winters in the Arctic tundra on flat, wide, barren ground, nesting in these huge colonies. They've come down through the Canadian prairies and the U.S. prairies, feeding on agricultural grains as they went in just absolutely massive flocks. And they're on their way to wintering areas in Texas and Arkansas and that general area. And that can be quite a sight if you see those massive flocks of Arctic nesting snow geese on their way. And they're the last thing here. Once the ice freezes and the snow covers all the food, you know winter has set in and the show is over until next spring.
So do you have to get really lucky to catch that migration?
No, not really. I mean, it depends on where you are in the state. But the nice thing about, in this case, snow geese, like we were talking with pelicans, they're big, conspicuous white birds, and they move in really big groups. So if you're along the Missouri River or in certain parts in the middle of the state, you're bound to see these big flocks moving in the morning and in the evenings to their away from their roosts and to feeding in the fields.
And they used to just be restricted to the Missouri River. And in fact, DeSoto National Wildlife Refuge in the western edge of the state used to entertain flocks of 500,000 birds at a time.
Wow.
And that was, yeah, wow was right. That's exactly what people, people would migrate there,
right,
just to see those flocks. And but now those flocks have sort of spread out over the state. We see them in the central part of the state using the lakes, and we even see them in eastern Iowa. So.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the fall shuffle, all of the different things that go on this time of year with wild creatures across the state of Iowa. With me, wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and also Adam Janke, Iowa State University Extension wildlife expert. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about some of the changes that take place this time of year as we move from summer into fall, and wild animals all over the place are preparing for the winter months. We've been talking a lot about migrating species, and we're going to talk about some of the animals who also stay a little bit closer to home. You're welcome to join the conversation with your questions and your observations. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, wildlife biologist Jim Pease. He is Emeritus Associate Professor in the Natural Resource Ecology and Management Program at Iowa State University. And also Adam Janke is here. He is an Iowa State University Extension wildlife expert and also an assistant professor in the Natural Resource Ecology and Management Program. And Jim, I let you off before the break. I asked Adam about one of his favorite things to look for in the fall migration season when it comes to birds. How about you?
I love watching, you've already mentioned the white pelicans. In part because I didn't grow up with them, I guess. They suffered like an awful lot of bird species did in the after World War II from DDT, and their populations were like brown pelicans were decimated by DDT, and they began to come back after the U.S. banned the use of DDT in the 50 states of the U.S. In 1973, and the pelicans began to recover. Now, white pelicans are really interesting because they once nested in the state, but disappeared like many birds and many other animals did by the turn of the last century, by about 1900. And populations really were decimated after World War II with DDT. And they nested, began, as they began nesting again, they nested basically in, they were a big lake interior species. So you'd see them on some of the big lakes in Minnesota. You'd see a small colony on a lake across Canada. And then they began to expand that range and as they recovered. And so they're now, we will have them nesting in Iowa. I don't know of any nesting colonies yet, but we certainly will have them, I would say, within the next 2-3 years in Iowa. But they do stay. We do have these flocks in the summertime now that are sort of bachelor or non-breeding flocks of pelicans that hang around some of the lakes in all over the state, from the Great Lakes of Northwest Iowa to the lakes here in Central Iowa. Right here in Ames, we have them quite frequently at a lake called Ada Hayden, just out outside of town. So they're hanging around during the summer, but the fall is the most magnificent time to watch them, because you have flocks of hundreds and hundreds of birds. I got to watch them last year. I've seen them several times do this sort of feeding frenzy, and they become like one organism. They all work together to herd fish towards a shoreline, and long lines. I watched over 900 birds in a line one time in southeastern Iowa on a lake there, working towards the shoreline, and they're shoulder to shoulder, and they're swimming forward, and their beaks are in the water, and they're pushing fish towards the shore and grabbing as many as they can as they go. And once one end of the line reaches the shore, they would fly up and join the other end of the line. It was just amazing. So this is one organism,
wow.
You know, feeding cooperatively together. So watching that behavior has always been a favorite of mine. And then seeing these and you can hear them sort of talking to one another as they climb these thermals. They circle around and around and around. And they get higher and higher and higher. And then they set their wings. And this is one of the ways that they can be very efficient in migration. They'll set their wings, and they don't have to flap their wings at all anymore. And they'll fly for 30, 40, 50 miles without flapping a wing at all, and kind of gliding slower, lower and lower and lower, and then they'll find another thermal air current rising up out of a river valley or off a lake or off of a forest, and climb up again and then fly down for another 30, 40, 50 miles. It's really a wonderful thing to watch, and I'm just always in awe of how they work together as a group.
And for people who want to get out and see some of this behavior and really see some of these birds, do you have a best time of day? Obviously, hiking or paddling are great ways to see it, but when do you go?
Yeah, it varies certainly with the species that you're looking for. And if you're looking for warblers and you want to see them with their feeding, you got to be there during the day. If you're wanting to watch migratory, be it cranes or pelicans, you have to get there early in the morning, because they're picking up as the day warms up. Those thermals begin to rise off of these bodies of water or these forests, and so you'll see big flocks of sandhill cranes or big flocks of pelicans that will rise all together in that morning as the morning warms up. So you want to be there early in the morning. But going to the wild areas, I would suggest that people contact. Well, there are lots of ways to do it online, but you can go to the Iowa Bird Line, that sort of thing. But you can also contact your local conservation board. Your county conservation board in your area will tell you where the best places are to go and see birds during migration. And if you've got big lakes in your area or big rivers, those are wonderful flyways for these birds as well. Interesting thing about them, you mentioned how they go about doing this, and it does take tremendous amounts of energy. I mentioned how pelicans will use that that thermal to rise, but then they set those wings and they conserve energy that way. But many birds, particularly long-distance migrants, will lose up to 50% of their body weight during migration. That's a lot of body weight to lose. And so they have to fatten up before they go, and they need stops along the way. And Iowa has traditionally been, that's why the potholes of Iowa were so important for so many birds.
Small wetlands.
Wetlands, yeah, right. That were scattered across the state by the thousands, particularly in the northern half of the state. And those became a really important stopovers. And when we drained 95%+ of them, those stopovers were gone. And so when we began to put water back on the land through programs like the Wetland Reserve Program and that, boy, birds show up immediately because those are important stopovers for them.
Well, I want to talk about mammals now because birds are not the only creatures that are adjusting before the cold weather comes. And we do, this time of year, we see a lot of small mammals. Sadly, many of them hit on the road, but still we may see them in our yards or along the side of the road. They're just a lot more visible this time of year. Raccoons, possums. Why do we see so much of them?
Well, in part, it's because they're getting thrown out. Their parents are saying, it's time for you to be on your own. And we saw that in August, particularly, and still seeing it with woodchucks. Imagine Adam's getting phone calls from people saying, I've never had woodchucks before, and they're showing up in my backyard and digging underneath my garden shed. And they are, because this is a time of year that woodchucks have been thrown out by their moms and say, it's time you're on your own, and they have to find a place to spend the winter. And so they'll try all kinds of things. They'll try a new yard that maybe has never seen woodchucks before, and so Adam gets the call. have you had a few of those, Adam?
Yeah, a couple of them.
Right. So they're getting tossed out by their parents. But the other thing that's happening, particularly with raccoons, there's a lot of research that shows the raccoons, actually something like 40% of the raccoon population shifts its range in the fall of the year. So that's why you're seeing in a state like Iowa that's crisscrossed with roads at least every mile, you'll see lots of dead raccoons on the road this time of year because of that fall shuffle. The shuffle is not just to find a winter quarters, although that's certainly part of it. But for young males, it's a way of finding new territory. They're getting tossed out and said, no, you're not going to, this isn't your territory. You're going to need to find some other place. And so they're crossing roads and moving many, many miles in some cases to try and find an open territory, a place where they can spend the winter, particularly with other raccoons, if possible, a place where they can sleep through the winter and feed at every so often as well. So it's there's a lot going on. It's territorial. It is I need to find a place of my own. And then in the case of bats, another mammal, they're migrating as well. And this time of year, I know Adam has been getting some calls from homeowners about bats. Because people are having, this is the time of year, August and September, when lots of bats end up in the wrong place. Part of it is that this is August and September are when young bats are out flying with their mothers. They're no longer in these little nursery colonies of bats are out flying with their mothers. And just like teenage drivers, they sometimes get into places they're not supposed to get. And that includes they'll follow the air current into your house when you open the door, or they'll find that air current down the chimney just irresistible and end up in the house.
What is it about it that makes it irresistible? Is it temperature? What is it?
Well, they follow air currents. And wherever there's an air current, and in the fall of the year, you get these tremendous air currents, for example, up and down in older homes with a chimney, you get these air currents that go up and down that chimney like crazy because you get a warm day and a cool inside, or a reverse. It's warm inside and it's very cool in the evening. And that's how bats find their way in and out of miles of labyrinths of caves, is they're following the air currents in that cave blindly. And so they're doing the same thing in your house. So if you block those air currents, then the problem will be solved. But that's what they're doing. It's just a natural thing for them to do, is to follow those air currents.
All right, and since we're talking about that, I know that that scares a lot of people a great deal when they find a bat in their house.
Right.
If you find a bat in your house, what do you do?
Open the door. That's the easiest thing. Depending on that, that's a simplistic answer, of course, but basically it means if you open the door, there's an air current where the air is rushing out or in, and they will tend to follow that air current right out. And that's often the simplest thing. You can kind of steer them towards that area by, you know, with a tennis racket or a broom. Don't swing at them, but just sort of gently just steer them to that area, and they'll fly right on out. And that's often the easiest way to do it. But when you're panicking in the middle of the night or something, then that's not so easy to remember. So in which case, then you can, if they light on a surface, you can certainly cover them with a can, slip a little piece of cardboard or paper underneath, and then take them outside and release them. But you want to figure out how they're getting in. Where are those air currents? And it may be as small as a crack underneath that attic door. Maybe they spent the summer in your attic, and now that crack underneath the door that may be only 3/8 of an inch, but there's a tremendous air current going between your house and up into the attic, and they will simply follow that air current right under the door into your house. So you got to find those places where they're getting in and block them so that they can't get into the living area of your house.
Right. So if it's one bat, does that necessarily mean you have a problem?
No.
Or, okay.
Not necessarily at all. Maybe that they just came in.
It was a crazy coincidence.
Right, exactly. Well, not a coincidence, but right. Maybe they came in an open door. Maybe the dog sat in the door. The cat sat in the door too long, and they, you know, whatever they or the kids left the door open. You know,
never happens.
Right. Oh no, does
no.
it? I think it might occasionally, anyway. But anyway, yeah, they. They're simply following those air currents.
All right. So what you're telling me is that when it comes to woodchucks, bats, raccoons, all kinds of critters, we've got a bunch of teenagers running around right now.
Exactly right. Yes, that's right. And like teenagers, they try things. And sometimes it's wrong. And that's how we get conflicts a lot, is that they end up in places they shouldn't be.
Now, they don't have a lot of time to get ready for winter, so now they've become independent from their mother.
Right.
And they've got maybe 2 months before it gets really cold.
Right.
What do they have to do
successfully in that
period of time?
That's exactly a great question, and that's why, in fact, a lot of species have lots of young, because many of them actually don't make that transition. They don't survive. And so the survival rates among young animals in general are often very, very low, because they either can't make the food transition, they can't make the migration, they can't find a place to overwinter that is adequate, or they find a place and bats, for example, may try to overwinter in an attic and find that, gee, it's fine in the early winter, but in January, when it might get 20 below, all of a sudden that's totally inadequate. They need a place that's much nearer 32 degrees above zero. They can take 10 to 20 to 30 degrees above zero, but when it gets below zero, gee, that's inadequate. And so they either have to find another place, wake themselves all the way up, move down into the walls sometimes of the house in seeking it, or simply desiccate, they dry up and die through the winter. So an awful lot of them don't make that transition well.
Now, of course, during mating season, we hear some conflicts out and about. If you keep your windows open at night, you'll hear raccoon encounters and things like that. Is that something that we also hear a lot of this time of year, as, let's say, raccoons are looking for a territory and maybe finding one that's already occupied?
Yeah, particularly if they're getting into the same, in a city, you'll hear them arguing over a particularly nice storm sewer. They will argue on
we
the
all
street.
Have different tastes.
That's right. But when you think about it, it's below ground. It's above freezing. There's food that's thrown there by people out of their cars, et cetera. You know, gee, it's not a bad spot. it could be a nice warm place to spend the winter.
So if you hear things like that at night, it's not necessarily anything to be concerned about.
No, not at all. No, yeah, you don't have to be concerned.
it's pretty serious for somebody.
For them, yeah.
Right.
So it's also time of year that a lot of other critters, because there are lots of young prey available, and sort of naive prey, for predators, particularly for experienced predators like owls, it's a great time of year for them. They can fatten up very, very well this time of year. There's lots to eat.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with wildlife biologists Jim Pease and Adam Janke today. Adam Janke is Iowa State University Extension wildlife expert, and they are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about all of the changes taking place outside for wild critters this time of year. You can join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. With me, wildlife biologist Jim Pease and Adam Janke, Iowa State University Extension wildlife expert. And we have a number of questions. This one's from Carol in Iowa City. Please comment on owls this time of year. Two nights in a row, the barred owls, I think, have suddenly started barking at each other. Normally, we hear the distant call of who cooks for you, but these past two nights, they've been right outside our back door. It sounds like three or four of them, and it's like maniacal laughter.
Yes, it sounds exactly like maniacal laughter. Barred owls are one great fun owl to have around, and they are... As I say, there's plenty to eat, but they're very gregarious. The young and the adults all sort of get mixed up in the fall, and they're greeting one another. What she's hearing instead of that, that call sort of morphs into what's called a greeting call. It's and that barking back and forth. It sounds like that maniacal laughter that she was talking about. And if you can watch them, if she can watch out the window during that time, they're actually bobbing their heads back and forth, and it's sort of like almost like shadow boxing with one another. And it replaces aggression in owls. It's quite interesting. They could hurt one another if they started actually fighting. So instead, they do this what's called the laughing call, or as she called it, the barking call. And it will they go back and forth. It sort of replaces aggression, and they're talking to one another. What they're saying, I don't think anybody knows for sure, but it's sort of certainly communicating with one another in the area. And why are they doing it at this time of year? I've heard them do it earlier in the summer as well, so I'm not sure that it's any more prevalent in the fall.
They just happen to be right outside her door.
Her door, that's right. And they may have, maybe she's got plenty to eat in the area. Maybe there's a good supply of rabbits, a good supply of ground squirrels. Barred owls are the most day-dwelling, diurnal of the owl species in the state, and so you'll often hear them hooting before sunset, even at dusk. You'll hear them talking to one another because they're already hunting, and so they may pick up chipmunks and ground squirrels and other small mammals as well. So they're communicating this time of year. What they're exactly communicating about, I don't think anybody knows for sure.
All right. I'm not sure. I'm not sure she needed a translation, but that would be good if you could provide it.
Yeah, well.
And Jim, just because it's you, I'm going to share this email. This is from Joel in Des Moines. He is sharing a joke. He says, here's a joke that may be appropriate for this conversation. My kids used this one year when trick-or-treating. Question, why did the chicken cross the road? Do you have a guess?
Why did the chicken cross the road? It's not, the answer can't be to get to the other side.
No, the answer is to show the raccoons that it could be done.
Aha! Very good. Very good. Well, we'll have to someday do the joke show again, and we'll feature that one.
All right. It's on the agenda for many, many moons into the future.
Oh, okay. Now, okay.
All right. Randy has a question for you from Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Hi, there's this cross between a finger scratching on a chalkboard and a little louder than that and more sharp. You have any idea what that might be out in the timber that's doing that?
This is at night?
Yeah.
Okay. Boy, I'm trying to think. You could have, that could be describing a raccoon's fighting.
No, it doesn't quite sound like.
Okay. There are small owls that make a variety of sounds. It doesn't sound like a screech owl call to me. There is a small owl called a saw-whet. You might get on the internet and see if you can find a call of the saw-whet, and they make a variety of calls. They're called a saw-whet because they have some calls that sound very metallic. And you're sort of maybe got a little metallic call there. Usually we don't hear them much at this time of year, but it's possible, certainly. So you might try the saw-whet owl, S-A-W-W-H-E-T. The other thing that occurs to me is that right now there are lots of insects. Certainly the katydids are calling, and that is made with their back, their hind legs scraping like that against their wings, and that is calling a lot right now because they're sort of peaking in numbers. So perhaps as an insect as well. Adam is suggesting to me that it might be a bobcat. I guess that's certainly possible, depending on where you are in the state. Is this along one of the major interior rivers?
Yeah, it's a Bear Creek, which is
Okay.
15 miles away from the Iowa River.
Right, yeah. It's possible, bobcat, but my bet is it's either an insect or maybe a little saw-whet owl.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And here's a question that I know you have a lot of bird feeders out, Jim. This one's from Liz. When is the best time to take in your hummingbird feeders?
Great question. Hummingbirds are feeding right now, trying to fatten up as if you can. If you're a little hummingbird, fattening up means gain an ounce or so.
or a fraction of an ounce.
Yeah,
right?
A fraction of an ounce. They are feeding very, very heavily, and you're seeing this sort of swarming behavior around feeders where you've got, I think we have at ours somewhere between 6 and 10 hummingbirds that are all swarming around our feeders, trying to all feed at once, and the old males are keeping them away, and they will soon decide that it's time to go south, and most will leave on their own. And usually I recommend to people that they take down their feeders around the 1st of October. Last year, I think we delayed it until about the 5th or 6th or 7th of October, and that was about right. They weren't using them anymore. They were already gone. And there's a little tiny bit of evidence, and not a lot, that I think it's more fear than anything. But I did see one study that shows that if you leave them up a little too long, those that are sort of hesitant to move may stay a little too long and may not leave in time. So it's good idea to take them around sometime around the 1st of October, depending on where you are in the state. If you're in the southern half of the southern third of the state, maybe a little later than that, the 7th or 8th of October, but sometime in that first week of October is a general good rule of thumb to take them down then.
All right, and let's go to the phones. This one is Vicki in Luther. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. I had a question for you guys. When you see all the birds flocking on the electric wires and stuff, mm-hmm. in those huge groups, we always wondered, are they family members or are they just random birds?
Well, they're not random. Usually they're birds of the same species, at least. Very often they're from the same colony, and you saw this probably earlier with a lot of the swallows. And there are two of the species of swallows, the cliff swallows and the bank swallows, are big colonial nesters. The barn swallows, less so. Rough-wing swallows, even less so. Those, there's not, they tend to be a little more loners than the other two species. So, but they all do get together, particularly those from the same colony. They'll join with other colonies along a river and will accumulate on the telephone wires or on the electric wires, as you say, and migrate south. They'll feed. They, as I mentioned earlier in the program, they do migrate during the day, so they'll feed as they go during the day. They'll catch insects on the wing. But so generally, those are groups of the same species. Now, you will see genus, the same kinds of birds. Swallows will all sort of go together. You'll see the same thing in the blackbirds, but you'll see a mix of species, just as you do in swallows. So you'll see red-winged blackbirds, sometimes groups of starlings with them, yellow-headed blackbirds sometimes will mix in, brown-headed cowbirds. They'll kind of be in a mixed flock, but they're all sort of blackbirds, and they'll sort of move together. The starlings, however, you will see sometimes in huge flocks, hundreds and hundreds of birds migrating together, and they're pretty spectacular to watch because they have these, as they all sort of move in the air together, it's almost like a wave, and it's really, really beautiful to watch. There are some videos available on YouTube that show some of the starlings, in particular in Europe, where there are thousands of birds migrating, and it is a spectacular wave of birds.
Thanks a lot for your call, Vicki. And we haven't talked about a little bit larger mammal that we do see in the fall, and that's the white-tailed deer. And
right.
Adam, they really change their behavior in the fall and particularly in the winter. What kind of changes are they going through this time of year?
So white-tailed deer, like a lot of our mammals that we've been talking about, the females have been raising the young. And in the case of a healthy deer herd, we see some of these young does will split away from their mothers fairly early on, and some of them will even breed later into the year. The first step for white-tailed deer, the males are growing their antlers. If you're seeing white-tailed deer right now, most of them still have actively growing antlers with velvet on them. The males will quickly shed that. They'll be left with the sort of common antler characteristics, the white antlers, and then that's going to be what they're going to use to impress the females that they've been avoiding all summer, into what we call the rut, and that's the breeding season. And that's a period where the males will compete for females and breed with them. And then that is the breeding that's going to bring the young next spring in June and July. And so that rut period is October and November in Iowa. The males will be fighting with one another. They'll be running one another off. The little ones will be forced to the margins to maybe sneak an opportunity with a female on occasion. But the big ones, the bigger the antlers, big, strong individuals will get all the attention that time of year. And then during the winter, they tend to group up, particularly the females will go back into groups, where it's cold.
Right, and much more peaceful groups at that point.
Exactly. Very peaceful groups. They're helping one another find the food and keep warm during the winter to get them through to the breeding season when they give birth to their young.
Let's take a couple more calls before we're out of time.
Let me add one thing. This is the time of year, Charity, for drivers to begin to change your driving habits, because the fall of the year is when an awful lot of deer get hit on our roads. And now is the time to start changing, start watching the sides of the road, slow down so that you're not going to have a car deer accident.
Especially in those evening, overnight, and early morning hours.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. So.
Although maybe that kind of driving is a good idea all year.
Yeah, all year, right.
All right, Tim is on the line in Mason City. Hi, Tim.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Good, what's your question?
Well, I've been watching a solitary red squirrel in my back and front yard for the last couple of weeks, and I've been told that the gray squirrels, although they look brown to me, have pretty much driven reds out of the Mason City area. And certainly this one red is alone. guy. He runs and hides. In fact, he enjoys hanging out under my front porch. But
okay, is this is this red squirrel? Is this quite a bit smaller? The body without the tail, maybe 5 or 6 inches long.
Right. The body is much shorter. The tail. Long, though, I suppose, for balance.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So the red squirrel that you're talking about is restricted in the state to, it's a smaller squirrel than either our fox squirrels, which is the largest, or the gray squirrels, which is sort of a medium size. But the red squirrel is mainly restricted to northeastern Iowa. There is a disjunct population that was in Mason City. There's another one in Waterloo, but they're more found in the pine forests of northeastern Iowa, over in Winnesheek, Alamakee counties, Clayton counties, those sorts of areas, the driftless area of the state. So we do have a couple of populations, and Mason City was one of the population centers of red squirrels. They're aggressive little buggers, and generally they can hold their own, but it may be that the gray squirrels in the area have taken up enough of the homes that they can't, I don't know what's going on with the population there, but it may be that they've been driven out by other squirrels, and that does happen occasionally. Usually fox squirrels are the most aggressive and will drive out gray squirrels, but perhaps the grays are driving out the reds in that area. We'll have to take a look at that and see if we can find out some more.
Well, and what are squirrels up to this time of year? I actually saw a mother squirrel carrying a baby squirrel the other day, which seemed a little late for that, so I hope they're going to be okay. But
right.
Their second clutch, if they have a second clutch, should be pretty much ready to go on their own, right?
Oh, yeah, they should be on their own. Like a lot of species, there are always these genetic experiments going on, and maybe have a little later, and some year maybe they'll survive. Maybe they'll be the ones that do well. But this time of year, they're storing food like crazy. And red squirrels are different than the grays and the fox. The grays and the fox will randomly store food, a nut over here, an acorn over there. You know, they'll spread them and they'll dig those little holes in the yard. Red squirrels have what are called middens, M-I-D-D-E-N-S, middens, where they're like pantries. They might be a hollow log. It might be a place under a tree, a little hollow in the base of a tree. And they'll put nuts and acorns in there, so it's this pantry of food that they come back to during the winter. Red squirrels will actually store mushrooms. They'll drying those mushrooms this time of year. Sometimes you'll see a mushroom up in the sort of the notch of a tree, and you say, "What's that mushroom doing up there?" And they're drying them out just like
Wow.
we dry mushrooms, and then they put them in their middens for the midwinter a snack.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Great fun.
All right. Well, and we are out of time. There's a lot more going on out there, and it is a great time of year to get out and try to see some of the stuff going on. Jim Pease, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is also Emeritus Associate Professor in Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. Adam Jenke, thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Adam Jenke, Iowa State University Extension Wildlife Expert and Assistant Professor in Natural Resource Ecology and Management. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth, and Emily Woodbury. We have production assistance today from Gray Lanta, and you can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Tweet us @IPRTalk. You can also follow me on Twitter @CharityNebby. This is Talk of Iowa.